When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Couple of armchair GMs who have yet to be wrong with any of their Timberwolves takes. Right. It's Flagrant Howls with Phil Mackey and Kyle Tighe.
This is a Timberwolves lifestyle show for all of those of you who partake in the Timberwolves lifestyle. Phil Mackey, Kyle Tighe, former head of Canis Hoopus. I'm part of the Mackey and Judd Show and Purple Daily. And a lot of things to cover here, Kyle, in the last week. I feel like this is kind of the dead... Once you trade for Rudy Gobert and finish out Summer League, it's like, okay, now we're hitting the doldrums. But the Wolves did do some things, and some publications came out with some interesting things about the Wolves over the last week.
I know, I got nervous after the Gobert trade because I was like, what are we going to talk about
now
for
what?
The next 3 months? And now it's just like, oh, we got some over-unders. We got some more signings. People are mad. Like, great time to talk about the Timberwolves.
Yeah. Okay, before we get into three of the bigger headlines over the last week, what is the favorite thing you've discovered from your childhood room that you are podcasting Dude. From right now?
I'm coming to you live from Phil Jackson's old stomping grounds, Grand Forks, North Dakota. He played at the University of North Dakota. I'm in my childhood bedroom. Hasn't changed since I was 17. I have, like, a lot of Ricky Rubio stuff.
Oh, see, man. Is there a bobblehead in there? It looks like multiple bobbleheads.
Signed Rubio thing, a couple Garnett stuff. So, yeah, I don't know. My mom is just going to keep it until she hopes I move back one day, even though I'm a 33-year-old adult. So, yeah, the Rubio stuff is nice. It's giving good vibes, kind of, you know, changed my face, putting me in a good mood.
Yeah, Alexi Shved style. You know, actually, when I think back to my childhood room, and my stepdad still lives on the hobby farm that I mostly grew up, like at age eight going forward. And I remember, because I first really got hooked on the Wolves, first or second year of Kevin Garnett and then Stephon Marbury. So this would have been like 95, 96, 97. And I have my little like KG jersey and posters and stuff and my little Nerf basket, and I would play little basketball games. But I remember very distinctly listening to Gus Johnson do a package of play-by-play games in the mid-90s. And we could maybe hit on this in the episode today, too. Charlie Walters from the Pioneer Press floated. Let's hit this right now. Yep. Gus Johnson as a name floated by Charlie Walters, who's, for the younger audience, you know, Charlie's been retired as a regular columnist for a while, but he still floats out like once or twice a week these little insider Minnesota sports scoops articles. And I don't think he's just pulling it out of thin air, but I would love to see a Gus Johnson return. I don't think you get rid of Dave Benz, who's just rock solid at his job, unless you're going national profile guy. There was a time where Gus Johnson and Kevin Harlan were calling Wolves games in the mid to late 90s.
So that's just big game hunting again, right? Tim Connolly, Rudy Gobert, Gus Johnson. You're going to have to pay him a lot because I'm pretty sure he's got a good gig with Fox, right?
Like, so he's doing Fox. Isn't he also doing, I think he might be doing basketball for someone too still. He's doing college basketball games, I think, still.
But that would be a big get when they, I think, you know, Dave Benz, I think, was just his contract ended. So he was kind of just not renewed rather than let go is how I understood it. But I knew that they want to go, you know, they wanted to go big game hunting. I thought they were going to maybe go with a female analyst. That job is really hard, by the way. Like, Jim Pete's great at his stuff, but you got to, I mean, you know this doing what you do. Like, you got to steer the ship a little bit, right? And get all the ad reads in and stuff and have, like, basketball knowledge and just a good overall personality. So he would be great. I was thinking about Gus Johnson calling, like, an ant step back three to win a game. Gus would lose his mind.
The Gusgasms would be countless this season.
Overdosing on just energy. So I don't know. We'll see if it happens. Charlie Walters, he's like just really plugged in. So when he says stuff like that, it's like, you definitely know that they're kicking it around. But they have a big hole to fill because Dave Benz, like you said, was rock solid and really good at his job.
Yeah, I think it was in the little birdie told me section of his insider column. So. Okay. Oh, we'll see what happens. But all right, let's get into a few of the bigger headlines over the last week. And by the way, thanks to everyone who has left a 5-star review and or a 5-star rating and a positive review on Apple Podcasts. And you can give us 5 stars on Spotify as well. And if you could subscribe to the Score North YouTube channel, then we'll deliver you these Wolves takes on a regular basis here on Flagrant Howls. So PointsBet has the over. I think this is the first sports book that has set over-unders for the majority of teams. Like the Nets are off the board. There's a few teams off the board still, but they've got the Timberwolves at 49.5 as I'm staring at this right now, which is tied with the Heat at 49.5 and behind only the Grizzlies, Sixers, Warriors, Nuggets, who are all 50.5, the Bucks at 51.5, the Suns and the Clippers both at 52.5, and then the Celtics are way up there at 55.5 for an over-under here. The Mavericks are beneath the Wolves at 47.5. Pelicans are at 44.5, just going through the Western Conference. Blazers at 40.5. Lakers off the board right now. So I guess my question to you, Kyle, is are the Wolves a 50-win team now? Sort of ironclad, you know, barring a rash of injuries, are they a 50-win team now?
So this will be their 34th season. Do you know how many times in those first 33 they won 50 games?
Let me try and nail this here. So 03-04, they won whatever it was, 58 or something. Is it 58?
Yep, that's correct.
Wow. I think the year before that they won, was it 50 on the nose?
51 and 31.
There was like the first year they made the playoff, they were like 40 or 41 or something. I think it's 3 or 4. I'll say they've won 50 games 4 times.
That is correct. So
four
in,
times?
1999, 2000, 50, 32, then 01, 02, 50, 32, 51, 31 the following year, and then 58, 24, and then that's it. So
okay,
four
now
times.
Now do the Spurs.
Yeah. So four times in the 33 seasons they've been around, they've hit 50. So dude, you would think the answer is just to take that under, but looking at those other teams, and we'll get into this as training camp start and we get to the season, I would hammer the over. Like I want to know your opinion too, but I would hammer the over, not because just I'm bullish on the team, but I think you're going to see so many teams running Oklahoma City Thunder lineups come February and March as they all tank. I mean, this is a really good draft class, not just the French kid, but I think there's these twin brothers like the Thompson kids in the G League.
The Thompson twins, they're back.
The Thompson twins, yeah. So there's a lot of talent. So you're going to see 8, 9, 10 teams just completely throw it the last 8 weeks. And those are just easy wins. So I also think too, like with a guy like Gobert, you know, it's any sport, defense travels, defense carries home and away. So I think they'll just not have those weird losses to the Thunder or the Kings in mid-March. I think they'll just, at worst case, you know, they'll play good defense. They'll, you know, they'll rebound and they'll just beat up on all these bad teams. But I would say 50 and 32 is not that great. 32 losses is still a lot of losses for a team that has as much talent as them. So I would say over, I would say probably, like you said, 54 and what is that, 28? That would seem like a good number.
Yeah, and it would only be, you know, 50 wins would be a great landmark. As you said, it'd be the fifth time in franchise history. It would also only be 4 more wins than last year. But
I think
part of the discussion with the organization had to have been, all right, let's look at the Western Conference here for a second. Okay, yeah, the Jazz might be getting worse because they're trying to this is before, you know, I'm thinking like a month ago.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to, we know they're trying to offload Gobert behind the scenes and maybe Donovan Mitchell, but all these teams are going to get better. The Pelicans are going to get Zion back and the Lakers are going to be somewhat more prideful and maybe better by just being healthier. I don't know. We don't know what's going to happen there, but like there's going to be 10 decently viable teams in the Western Conference. So how can we avoid going backwards? But, last year's over-under, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, was like 34.5.
And they crushed it.
And that was one of those rare first guess. When that number came out, my first instinct was, well, wait a second. They played 500 basketball down the stretch for a couple months under Chris Finch, or like a month and a half. And that was just like on the fly without an offseason of system installation or anything. And Anthony Edwards is going to get better. So that was kind of a laughable number last year. This one seems a lot tighter, just a lot more realistic, where if a key player misses 20 or 30 games, you could easily go under. But I think Rudy Gobert, again, if he plays 65 plus games, I think he's a 50 win team centerpiece on defense. So
yep.
I hit the over on this, but I don't mash it like I would have mashed the 34.5 over last year, I guess.
Well, and I think you said, did you say it's at 49.5? I think it came out at 48.5.
So it's already up.
Actually think it's probably going to get to 50.5. I mean, because they move those things all summer. So, I mean, that's
look out,
you
Celtics,
right there,
man. Celtics,
a little value.
Objects in your mirror.
But, I mean, again, like, if you and I will crush them if they don't. Like, it seems like such a high number because, like you said, four times in 33 years. But, I mean, man, if they go 45 and what? I don't know. However many losses, like, that's really not good. And I do think we look at, like you said, all the teams that are getting better. But I kind of look at all the teams that are going to be really, really bad. Like, if the Jazz do move Donovan Mitchell in the next couple of weeks, like, they're going to be horrendous. And you play them, you know, three or four times. You play the Thunder three or four times. You're going to beat up on these teams like them in Indiana that are kind of shuffling the deck for their own rebuild. So, yeah, maybe not hammer it, but over 50 and 32 is, like, the absolute benchmark. You have to
By the way,
get to that amount.
I think our next spinoff podcast here off Flagrant Howls is just you and I doing a podcast where we try to do math on the records. Like, okay, so if they win 48, then it would be,
I gotta
hold
get
on,
Excel
how
open. Well, I still think about that with football too, right? Like, I'm always like, yeah, you know, the Vikings will go 10-6, and it's like that extra game throws me for a loop. So if they
wait, no, they'll go 10-14, or no, wait, shoot.
They got to cut it to 80 games, so it's just an easy number, but no. Hammer the over if it, and again, if you understand any betting stuff, like if it was at 48.5 and they moved to 49.5, like there's good value there. So lock it in early if you like it, or if you don't like it, wait, because I do think it'll probably get up to 50.5.
Well, before we get to the Austin Rivers thing here, I want to throw one of my takes at you that I floated to Judd and Declan on Maggie and Judd this week, because I think so many people are. We're so caught up in the, well, they just, this is the bullet that they fired. It's Rudy Gobert. This is it. Now you know, you have no more trade capital. It's harder to trade draft picks, obviously, because you have to have one in back-to-back years and Gobert's contract. And boy, if it doesn't work, whatever that means, and we can decide. If,
right.
You know, to me, if it doesn't work, I think if they get to the playoffs and they win an average of 50 games these next 4 years, like, it worked. It's great.
Yep,
they were
100%.
They were relevant. And it'll be the second most relevant period in Wolves history. But people are ignoring the second window, which starts after the Gobert contract runs out. And it's the Anthony Edwards emerging into his prime window. And we touched a little bit on this last week, but people need to look beyond the 4 years here. You've got this blossoming superstar player. He's going to be 25 years old because he turns 21 like next week or like the first week in August.
Yep.
He's going to be 25 years old emerging into his basketball prime when the Gobert contract runs out. So if nothing else, if the Gobert contract just makes you a good playoff team that's relevant, maybe you do get bounced in the second round every year. But you wound up with X amount more playoff games and experience, and you got to sort of harden Anthony Edwards' playoff shell over those 4 years. It's worth it to me. I don't know. Like, people are just kind of ignoring, well, it's 4 years and then it's over. And then, like, now you've mortgaged the future and you're screwed. Like, no, Anthony Edwards is here in 4 years with like 3 years left on a max contract. Am I wrong on this?
No, because he's going to be Jason Tatum's age at that time, right? Like, when the Gobert deal is done, he'll be 25. Jason Tatum has aged slower than any other player ever. Like, how is he still 24? He's been in the league
amazing.
For like a decade. But yeah, he's going to be, like you said, 23 going 24. And I do think back, like, this happens in all sports, but like, you don't want Ant to just be on 30 and 52 teams for the next 4 years, right? Like, he'll still sign the rookie extension, but if you think that he is this once in a generation, like, lucky charm that the Timberwolves kind of fell backwards into, you want him to learn and play in as many meaningful games as possible moving forward, because if they're going to win a title, it's going to be with him as the best player, right? Like, I don't even think that's like really. I think this window, they're going to be really, really good. But I think if they're going to win a title, he has to be the best player. And you want him to get all those meaningful reps, right? You don't want him to be like in Cancun in mid-April. You want him to be in Boston or in New York in early June. So, I don't understand any of it. I don't understand how like they invested in Gobert and people just think like they have no options. Like, if it goes south, you flip a guy and then you retool. But wouldn't you just rather have the players? Like, that's like been my whole thing these last 3 weeks. Wouldn't you just rather have the eighth best starting lineup, according to Bleacher Report, than like the 19th best starting lineup?
Yeah. So, and then figure out the imperfections, you know, and think about, and this probably apples to oranges comparisons here, but when you get a good young star player, you get a Dwayne Wade in the early 2000s or something, your goal now is for the next 10 to 15 years, and there might be different iterations of this, your goal is to put as much talent around that good young superstar player as you possibly can. So I'll keep going down the Dwayne Wade pathway here. So you draft Dwayne Wade. Oh, my gosh, look at this guy. He's a special talent. It's amazing. Okay, let's trade for Shaq here and just bring Shaq in for a while, and it's a perfect pairing. Okay, he ages out. Take your lumps for a couple years. Okay, now let's go. We'll do the LeBron James and Chris Bosh thing over here. And then after that, it was go bring, I think they brought in Dragic or whatever. Like, you're just, even if it's not perfect. And by the way, the Wolves don't exactly get to choose between, here are five flawless options. Pick your option, right? Like the Lakers have at times over the years. An option presented itself. Maybe it isn't perfect, or maybe they have to work out some, you know, defensive issues with him and Towns. But like, the main objective should be, just put as much talent around both Cat and Anthony Edwards as possible. And I would rather take my chances on an already established Hall of Fame bound player than another lottery ticket that may not even pan out. And if they do, it's not for four more years, you know, a draft pick.
And I think some of the backlash too, other than the price, was how Gobert's 30. I mean, he just turned 30, but he is 30, right? But again, if you just, you literally blew out a side of your house and added a window, and now you have this kind of contention window. But then 4 years from now, when, Gobert's off the books and maybe he re-signs under, you know, a two-year deal, he's just kind of like the Dikembe Mutombo phase of his career when he's old and just kind of stands in front of the rim. But then Carl will be 30, and Carl's going to age. His game's going to age in a way that he's still going to be productive at 30. And then you just kind of move. And I mean, I think I tweeted this out the other day, but like, you still have Jalen Noel, who's 23 right now. Jaden's 21. Wendell Moore's 20. Josh Minot, who just signed, is 19. Like, the kid from Italy's 19. So it's not like all of a sudden it's this all-in move for the next 4 years, and then we're going to go back to this rebuild. It's like, actually, we're just going to have this all-in move, and then we're going to have this brand new window. So I agree with you. To your question, you have this a bunch of young talent now. I think they did really well with the draft. Like I said, Minot is going to be awesome, and they kind of showed that by the contract they gave him. So a bunch of young guys to pair with the proven established guys, and now you go see on what you can do now, and then you just parlay it into hopefully four more years of success.
Next headline here from the last week. So Austin Rivers is about to join his seventh NBA team in, I guess, about 10 years or so. He did spend three full years with the Clippers, and he's just bounced around all over the place. New Orleans, the Rockets, the Nuggets, the Wizards for a minute, I believe, and the Knicks. So Austin Rivers comes in here, which gives the Wolves, as of right now, it gives the Wolves a bench of Kyle Anderson, Torian Prince, Austin Rivers, J-Mac, Jalen Noel, Naz Reid, Bryn Forbes, Wendell Moore, and Josh Minot. How do you feel about that?
I think my first thought on the Austin Rivers thing is that, like, I think if you're not familiar with him as a person or a player, like, he's not necessarily the guy that was drafted by the Pelicans, because he did come in with like a silver spoon. You know, he's Doc's kid. He played at Duke. He thought he was going to, like, he probably thought he was the best player in that draft. But I don't know. There was a really good Ryan Russillo pod that Austin Rivers did earlier this year. And he like talks about like finding himself and becoming like a role player and being a veteran and a leader. So I kind of like it. I know the fear is that he's going to go on the court and think he's the best player on the team. Right. And he's going to go heavy ISO and take the ball away from Ant. But I think anytime you sign a guy for a 1 year deal, how can it be that bad? He gave them a lot of good minutes in Denver. I think he played like 60 games. I don't see how he's going to play 60 games here. I mean, we could go into a rotation thing quick, but like, I don't know where his minutes are going to come, because if Chris Finch 3 weeks ago randomly surprised us by saying Jalen Noel's name, like, Jalen Noel's minutes are going to be eaten by Austin Rivers if Austin Rivers plays 60 games. Yeah. So I still like the signing because it's a veteran. I think he can do some stuff. But I also think he's going to catch a lot of DNPs because I don't know where he's going to fit into a 9-man rotation.
And that's a question I have, is how are DNPs going to sit with Austin Rivers? Is there any chance that this could kind of blow up in their face? And because you see, I think he has a higher opinion. By the way, I'm okay with the signing. I think just bringing in good players who are accepting of, like, Torian Prince is accepting that he is a role player, and Austin Rivers is largely accepting of the fact that he's a role player. And so I'm good with this, but I was kind of wondering the same thing you were, which is this should all start with Jalen Noel deserves 20 to 25 minutes unless he plays himself out of those minutes. And then, okay, you go back to being a bench player, like riding the bench, actually. So I think you've kept to sort of start with giving the guys like Jalen Noel a chance to thrive because he has a lot more upside than Austin Rivers. But at the same time, Austin Rivers is used to getting 15, 20, 23 minutes a night on almost every team he's played for. So there will be an interesting, tricky minutes dance here.
Well, and Dane Moore touched on this too, but there's just a lot of Dell Demps happening for the Timberwolves all of a sudden. Like Dell Demps was on Utah's bench last year and they bring in Gobert. Dell Demps drafted Austin Rivers and now he's on the team. Like there's just a lot of those little connections. So maybe going back to how is a week straight of DMPs going to sit with Austin Rivers, who's, again, when you're on a one-year deal, you're also fighting for your life.
Yeah.
And you want to put, you know, something on tape so that you get another deal. So it's going to be interesting. I think he has matured. Maybe he just sold me a bill of goods doing a couple media tours. But I think he'll be a fiery veteran to have in there. Like I said, he also can get to the rim, which is like low-key something the Wolves don't have a lot of guys that can do. I mean, they can give him spot minutes. But yeah, the one concern I have, and I'm an Austin Rivers guy, was that as soon as I saw the transaction come across, I was like, yeah, how does that affect Jalen? Because you've made a point to be like, Jalen's a foundational piece. I'm sure they're going to try to work out some extensions. So you can't have him eat into those minutes because Jalen should probably be your sixth man moving forward. Like you said, 22 minutes a night, unless he's giving you just terrible things on defense.
Yeah, I was just looking up here because I do remember early in his career, he was definitely a like crash the rim guy on offense. Just get to the rim as much. You know, he was getting to the rim. Yeah. His first, second year in the league at a 40% of his shot attempts were at the rim. And then another 30% were inside 10 feet. So just like in 2013-14, do some quick math here. Like 70% of his total shot attempts were inside 10 feet. So he was, that was 2013-14. That number has dipped from 70% to 30% last year. And maybe it's because he's 29 and not 21, and maybe he's just not getting to the rim as much. It looks like he's fallen a lot more in love with taking threes as a huge chunk of his shot repertoire. And he's not a great three-point shooter. So I would be curious to see, do they try to revert back to something else offensively, or did they bring him in here to just sort of be a slightly below-average three-point shooter who chucks seven times a game?
And it's hard, right? Like in middle of July to start like planning out rotations, like you're going to have guys get hurt, right? Like you're just, D'Angelo Russell is going to probably miss 10, 15 games. And like you do, if he's out, regardless of what you think of him, you're all of a sudden very concerned because it can't just be the Jordan McLaughlin show. So maybe Austin Rivers gives you some spot minutes. I did just see on Basketball Reference that his nickname is Sub-Zero. So that automatically, like I'm actually might flip my take on the fly here. I'm concerned about that. But no, I mean, if he doesn't, I'm more concerned, like you said, in the locker room. I think he can still play basketball, but what's he going to be like in the locker room? Is he going to be okay just sitting next to Ant and kind of telling him some things, but like I said, not playing for 10 straight days? But I do lean towards, I'd rather just have depth than not have depth, right? Because you're going to have a bunch of guys have to spot start over the 82-game season.
Yeah, and it is worth, now that Pat Bev is not in this locker room anymore, and Gobert brings a lot of playoff experience, but you take Pat Bev's playoff experience out, sort of swapping in with Gobert's, at least Austin Rivers brings 60 games of playoff experience, too, with Clippers, Rockets, and Nuggets the last couple seasons. So he's, for whatever that's worth, maybe there is a leadership component here that is going to be really helpful. Another headline from the last week here, your thoughts on Josh Minot getting a 4-year, just under $7 million contract here as a second-round pick. Kind of a calculated bet here.
I was so happy for him. Like we talked about this last time, but he was such a good interview in Vegas, and we got to talk to him a couple times. He clearly displayed that there weren't 43 players better than him in the draft. We kind of talked about how he got to Memphis, and maybe that's why his stock kind of deflated, because he was a highly rated high school kid. So I think, you know, whoever was in charge of that negotiation, if it was a Sachin Gupta, a Gupta special, whatever, like they got him on such a good deal. He makes more money as a second rounder than most of those guys do, but it's also, as you know, team friendly. I think year 3 and 4 of the deal aren't guaranteed. So they have a good young player who I just said was 19, locked up for 4 years. And when you're paying your two centers $100 million next year or in 2 years, you need to have guys making $1.1 million that could maybe give you 12 to 15 minutes a year from now. I still think he's a big project, but he is going to replace Josh Okogie. He's going to be energy. He's athletic. He's long. He'll probably sniff Des Moines a couple times just to get some reps with Iowa, but I was happy for him because I just think he's the best player they drafted. I do think he's going to probably have a higher ceiling than Wendell Moore. But I like prospecty guys. I like the long rangey guys that you can kind of tween and teach some stuff.
Yeah. I'm probably putting you on the spot here, but if Minot pans out to, you know, the 90th percentile version of whatever he can be, is there a comp in the NBA right now that you look at and say he could be this guy in 6 years from now?
Oh man. Every time I see someone like him, I think like Paul George, because Paul George is just one of my favorite players just in terms of like what he can do. But to be Paul George, you have to be able to like dribble. And I haven't seen enough of his handle to kind of put him in that realm. But I mean, I also just think on a local level, if he can just be another Jaden McDaniels, right? Like if he can just give you, if you can a year from now have where you put Jaden and Josh out there on the wings and maybe Ant's the lead ball handler, and then you got Carl and Gobert, like that's a lot of offense. That's a ton of length. That's a lot of like, you know, creation and shot making. Cause I thought Josh's shot looked better in Vegas than it ever did in Memphis. So, I would hope he becomes like a very watered down Paul George. He'll never have the ceiling, but just a wing creator, right? That can kind of, Josh also displayed some, like he had some nifty passes in Vegas. I was like, you didn't do any of that stuff in college. So maybe he's got a bunch of tricks in his bag that we don't know about, but I hate comps, by the way. It's like, you did put me on the spot. I have no idea, but Paul George just always comes to mind. Do you have one better than that?
I think comps are hilarious. Cause like I actually love comps in that it's just interesting fodder to just like, it's a totally made up thing. And then you can either strongly agree with the made up thing, or you can get mad and argue and fight. And I think we talked about this on the first episode we did a few weeks back, but one of the comps for Wendell Moore was 90s Ron Harper that I saw on one of the draft scouting websites. And maybe you and I didn't talk about this, but it was like, you know, Ron Harper, who came into the league as a shooting guard in the late 80s. And it was like, you know, 6'5", could handle the ball. And then once he got to the Bulls, and then I think he played maybe with Portland or San Antonio or something. But he then became a 6'5", big bodied point guard who could play defense and shoot some threes and distribute stuff. I'm like, yeah, wow. Yeah, if the Wolves just drafted like a 2022 version of Ron Harper, that'd be awesome. So now I'm running him unfairly through that prism of a really good floor general from the 90s. So he didn't ask for that comparison, but here we are.
That's such a next level thing too. Is like, I think of comps as like modern day comps, but when you start throwing out like 1984 version of this player, it's like, whole, that's like such a deep dive. I remember the Ringer did compare him to like Darius Baisley or like a John Collins. I saw nothing of John Collins in his game. At least I didn't in Vegas. But I think he could handle the ball a little better. He did have like a step back three in his first game. So, and he talked about how a lot of the stuff he did in Vegas, he wasn't really allowed to do or didn't put on display in Memphis. So if his shot comes around, that would be massive. Because I think they just drafted him as a long, tall guy who could rebound and block shots. But if he can also put the ball on the floor and hit threes, his ceiling goes, then he becomes, you know, peak Ron Harper back in his day.
Actually, no, we should make a rule on this podcast going forward. If we're going to do player comps, they have to be at least 20 years old.
Deal.
It's got to be like 80s, 90s, or early 2000s comps.
Done. Yeah, like just
Eric Snow.
Like 94 Luke Longley. Just that'll be like one for Cole Aldrich.
1998 Anthony Peeler. Just a brilliant spot-up shooter.
More points for as many years as you go back. But no, I was excited for him. I think he's good. I didn't know if he would get a deal like that, but it shows that they believe in him. But it also shows that they won the negotiation again, because again, you don't actually owe him anything in year 3 and 4. So a win-win for everyone. And maybe you'll see him get a couple minutes with the team. I don't see how behind Prince and Jaden and Kyle Anderson and then your $200 million centers, but if he gets any minutes, that would be great, because I think he's a really good kid, and I think he's got a really high ceiling.
Yeah. Did you see the DeMarcus Cousins video that surfaced from Las Vegas?
Dude, I was
a couple
like almost in the background of that. Like Tim Connelly was right at the Cosmo, and the I think it's Baskets or Buckets podcast had it all stationed out all week, and they're doing interviews. And I saw the video, but if you didn't see it, it's Tim Connelly walking essentially behind a recording of a podcast that DeMarcus Cousins was on, and Cousins interrupts it and just yells out like, "Tim," he's like, "call me, call me," because DeMarcus Cousins is a free agent. So
and was in Denver last year. So they,
well, go if you want to go back. Yeah, he was. And he gave them some good minutes. I mean, I think he also got ejected a handful of times because that's what he does. I think maybe he's matured a little bit. I do think it would be wild to have him and Austin Rivers in the same locker room. I know Denver tried it and it apparently worked, but I don't know. I mean, I know they have a roster spot, right? After they signed Josh Minot, they have one more roster spot. I don't know how DeMarcus Cousins is going to fare, like catching DNPs, because I think that 15 spot is not going to play. But if you sign DeMarcus Cousins, you probably got to just do something with Naz Reid, right? Because you're not going to have all four guys playing minutes. So
do they need another big, do you think? If they didn't add anyone else, you know, 6'10 or taller at this point.
I mean,
you good?
Maybe in like December, right? If an injury happens, knock on wood. But I just go back to what we talked about the first time the Gobert thing happened. Like, Gobert, Carl is just going to play all 48 minutes, like at center. Like, I don't see a time where one of, or they're both sitting. So if you're going to have one of them out there at all times, I don't know how I think feel about Cat and Boogie next to each other. I don't know how I feel about Gobert and Boogie. So
yeah,
that's where I think Naz Reid kind of slides in pretty well along those guys. Or maybe Naz gives you 4 minutes at the center spot, but I don't really think they need, they could use a big, but not like DeMarcus Cousins. Like, I was sad that they missed on Jamichael Green, who like got cut by OKC and signed with Golden State. He's like, you know, more of a traditional power forward. But I also think too, if you're going to fill that spot, it's probably a big, because I have no idea where they fit another guard on the roster. They have so many of them.
Yeah. I'm probably out on Boogie, but it would be kind of fun. It would be kind of fun. Perth, you know, per 36 minutes is tough because he can't play 36 minutes anymore. Coming off the ACL 2-3 years ago, he's a bench role player who plays like 15 minutes a night on the 3 or 4 teams he's played for. But just for fun, per 36 minutes, he still averages 23 points, 15 rebounds, and 5 assists. So he's still like in 12 or 15 minutes, he's giving you sort of the same Boogie line, but he can't do it for 30, 35, 40 minutes like 10 years ago in Sacramento.
And you know, I think he's become a punching bag because like he does have a temper and gets kicked out a lot. But yeah, like you just said, he was really good when he was really good. Like he had a couple of years where he was pretty dominant. I mean, he's a huge, there's that like viral photo where Kat's like trying to back him down and DeMarcus Cousins is just standing there with like this straight face.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at worst case scenario, you sign him, you could like relive that photo in practice, but
they should. Yeah, it'd be good.
If you're going to get another big, I'd probably want someone with younger, a little more upside, and also is okay if they like sit in Jake Lehman's seat and just never get off the bench.
Yeah. All right. Let's, we weren't going to do this, but just for fun, I think this is going to fit here. We've been talking about how do we, you know, the show is called Flagrant Howls. How can we bring some sort of fun little, you know, benchmark in that has to do with flagrant fouls? And so I'm going to bring this to the show. This is your idea. So if it fails, people can blame Kyle for this here. If it train wrecks, but it's called flagrant or no, or maybe we can say flagrant foul or common foul here.
None. Okay.
And we can workshop this. You know, we can tweak this as
it's
we
July.
Go.
Why? We're working.
We're workshopping stuff here. Yeah. So according to Brian Windhorst, I'll set it up this way. On a recent episode of his Hoop Collective podcast, the hefty haul that Jazz executive Danny Ainge garnered for Rudy Gobert has the rest of the league, quote, bitching openly. This is from Brian Windhorst on the podcast. What he got for Gobert, which everyone in the league is bitching about, like, can you believe it? How could they possibly do that? I mean, I've talked to 10 different people who've bitched to me about that trade. Not only did they get all this stuff, 4 picks, 3 unprotected, 1 lightly protected, and they offloaded $140 million in salary. So how Danny Ainge has moved the game again. So my question to you, Kyle, is NBA executives are bitching about essentially the price tag in a trade going up for other players now post-Gobert. Is their bitching a flagrant foul over the top, or is it a common foul? Does it make sense?
I don't want to just start this new adventure we're coming up with and kind of toe the line. So, because I could make a case for both, but I'm going to say flagrant only because I think there probably is a little issues you have to iron out. I don't think you want to piss off other owners. I'm not even concerned about like the front offices, but if like owners are like talking about it in their group chats about how Glenn and Mark and Alex, like, you really effed this all up for the rest of us, and now we have to like just purge all these assets to try to get star players. You don't want to piss off those people because they're the ones at board of governor meetings that make the rules. But from a front office thing, it's just, it's hysterical. I love, like, I absolutely love it. Like, I'm totally okay if the Timberwolves, who we said have won 50 games four times in 33 years, aren't just the skid mark of NBA franchises. Like, if they're just the bad guy now, that's awesome. Like, just piss everyone off.
Yeah.
Go win a bunch of games. Like, do what you got to do. Also, too, like, what were they supposed to do? Like, be the Houston Rockets and just give up their, like, give up their players? Like, the Harden trade looks a little better now, but at that time, it was like they just gave James Harden away to form a big three and they got nothing back. Like, do you want to be the feeder system? Do you want to be on the wrong side of the Paul Gasol to the Lakers trade? Like, so I think it's hysterical. I also think, too, and I want to spin it back to you quick from, like, conspiracy theory, Kyle. What if Tim Connelly sensed at the same time that he was trading for Gobert that Kevin Durant had some steam to go to Phoenix? And that would have been a disaster because Phoenix would have been so good. What if Tim Connelly's like, what if we just pay $1.25 and we know we voluntarily pay $1.25 so it does poison the market, as Windhorst said, and then nothing else can happen for a while? Like, do you think that's like a conversation that like could have come up after a couple beers? Like, what if we just get a little weird here and mess this all up for everyone?
After some habanero wings, after go to the chandelier bar at the Cosmo and get the secret flower drink, float some crazy. I will say I fully embrace and support conspiracy theory Kyle making appearances on this show. So this is a safe space for conspiracy theory.
But,
Kyle.
Okay. Conspiracy Kyle will be back. But again, I say that in jest, but it is, they did do that. They did poison the market because now people are frozen. But whether they did it or not, it's kind of awesome. And it's great when people are mad at the Timberwolves. Because
do you have, I'm going to answer your conspiracy theory question with a question of my own. Do you have like a favorite all-encompassing player evaluation metric? Like, do you have one that when you're trying to figure out, all right, what's player efficiency rating or, you know, win shares per 48? Are you an analytics nerd like that?
A little bit. I mean, I do like win shares. I mean, I think win shares per 48 is a pretty good one.
Some people bitch about it, but when you start to rank players based on win shares per 48, it's a pretty good ranking of the best players in the NBA. It's like Giannis and Jokic and Embiid. It probably overskews toward big men.
Yeah, that's true. And you can poke holes in that stuff, but I mean, I know Mark Laurie likes that stat. But no, I think win shares per 48, and I know that Gobert is very highly up there, so I know that that was something that came into the discussions down at Mayo Square. But yeah, I mean, I just think that that's a good one because, like you said, when you look at a historic list, you don't really see a lot of outliers up there, right? Like, you don't see a random, you know, you don't see Luke Ridnour in the top 10 of shooting guards.
I think so. The reason I ask you that, and I will grant you that I like win shares per 48, but it does skew very heavily toward big men. There's a lot of centers.
Right. Yeah, that's fair.
Which could be one of two things. It could be that stat is maybe, you know, putting too much value into what big men are doing. Or it could be that maybe the league is actually undervaluing and fans and media are undervaluing what a great big man can do. I could see that too. Player efficiency. So win shares per 48. We got Kyle back and we may have lost you for a second there.
No, we're good.
We got you back. Okay.
Yeah.
Win shares per 48. Rudy Gobert was third last year behind Jokic, Giannis, just ahead of, and again, I don't think Robert Williams is the fourth best player in the NBA, but boy, that team almost won the finals in large part because of what Robert Williams brings on the interior. Yeah. The guy's awesome. He's a very unheralded player. Joel Embiid, Jimmy Butler. There's some dudes in here that probably don't make a lot of sense. Like Dwight Powell probably shouldn't be in the top 10. So I will grant you that win shares a little bit. So let's use player efficiency rating, which weeds out some of the big man noise. Last year, Jokic and Giannis were number one and two. Embiid was third. LeBron was fourth. Kevin Durant, fifth, Trae Young, sixth, Luka Doncic, seventh. Rudy Gobert was eighth ahead of Ja Morant, Kat, Jimmy Butler, and DeMar DeRozan, all right? So all these people that are saying, if the Wolves pay that for Rudy Gobert, then what's a team going to have to pay for Kevin Durant? And I am not about to suggest that, like, Gobert's legacy or that he's a better player than Kevin Durant. But Durant is what? going to be 34 years old. He misses a lot of games due to injury. He's kind of a flaky, unreliable guy. Like, he's literally demanding a trade after signing a long-term contract, right? There's a lot of baggage with Kevin Durant, and he's 3 or 4 years older than Rudy Gobert. So I don't know that it's true that you should have to pay more in a trade for Kevin Durant. The Timberwolves are trading, as of right now, Rudy Gobert is in his prime as one of the greatest defensive big men in the history of the NBA. It should have cost a lot to acquire him. And almost any, whether you want to use win shares or player efficiency rating, or there's a couple other ones out there too, he is one of the 5 or 10 best, most impactful players in the NBA. It's going to cost a lot to get a player like that. I almost feel like people that think they overpaid don't put Gobert in that category of the 5 or 10 best players in the NBA. The Timberwolves obviously do, or they wouldn't have paid this much for him.
There's also like an NBA Twitter part of this that is like designed for some think piece down the road about how we just like use that main platform to shit on players or build players up, right? Like, I think Gobert, like you just said, across all these different metrics, he's like a top 15 guy that, like you said, in his prime, signed for multiple years, has never really been much of a locker room issue, or at least not in a sense of demanding trades. Yeah.
He gave some people COVID a couple years ago and touched a couple recorders, but yeah, we all make mistakes.
He might have licked a mic or two, but like, I just think we're constantly trying to like, if he's a 90 out of 100, we're just trying to tear him down to bring him to like an 80. Whereas like a guy like Russell Westbrook, again, with NBA Twitter and how fans do stuff, like his game has aged so poorly that he's like a 70 out of 100, but we just build him up because of fandom or tweets or jokes or whatever. That's like, we build up. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that people just don't like Gobert. The COVID thing really hurt his kind of perception. He can't do much offensively by himself in a league that still is, end of game situation, ball dominant guards, guys that can shoot. But I just think it's more of a perception thing because you talk to, and I did in Vegas, or you see these people talk about it, like to Windhorst, people that actually understand the game. Alex Caruso was on Reddit, JJ Redick's podcast, and was like, anyone who understands basketball, like, understand that this is a great trade, like that they're going to be really, really good. So, I think the analytics people love it. They have a lot of different metrics, whether it's the one I like, one you like, but they all find Gobert in that top 15. And it's like,
yes,
if you're Minnesota too, when's the last time you saw, I'm trying to think of this. I don't know if it was Jimmy Butler, but when was the last time you saw a, all NBA player get traded to a small team? It's always paying that tax. So whether they paid a tax to poison the market and fulfill my conspiracy theory, or they just had to pay a tax because that's what you do, because you're not LA, you're not New York. So, but to go circle back, because I have to throw back to you, like, did you just start laughing when you read that about everyone being pissed off?
Yeah, I think, first of all, I do think this is, it's a flagrant foul for people to be league executives to be bitching about this. The Timberwolves, just to zoom it back out to 30,000 feet and get out of the analytics weeds for a second here. If I could tell you, the Timberwolves, who were the highest scoring team in the NBA offensively last year. So on offense, they're probably going to get better, actually, because Ant's going to get better.
Yeah.
And you're swapping out Jared Vanderbilt, who wasn't doing anything meaningful offensively that Gobert couldn't do better, right? Like, Gobert is basically, just on offense alone, is a better version of what Jared Vanderbilt was in a lot of ways. He's going to grab rebounds, keep possessions alive. He's probably going to catch more lobs and maybe clean up more points inside. So your offense didn't get worse with this. Maybe you could make a case that you're leaning on some different guys off the bench, but your offense probably stays the same. And you just created a ready-made top 10 defense by adding this guy. So that's kind of your starting point, barring injury. And also, if I could just look at 34 years of Timberwolves basketball and say they've been relevant nationally for about 6 minutes in 2003-04, when they knocked off the Kings in Game 7 and people were like, oh, the Timberwolves, okay. Yep. And then Cassell hurts himself and that was kind of the end for it. So they just became relevant also as a franchise for the first time in a long time, all due respect to the Jimmy Butler run and, the 6 games against Memphis. But I'm just like, the more I look at this and the more time passes in the last 3 weeks, I love this trade more and more every single day. I don't fear the ramifications of this trade. I'm not a doom and gloom, oh my God, what about draft picks? You still get draft picks. You can draft young players if you want to. So, yeah, I just like, and if it, as a sort of like you said, conspiracy, Kyle, if a side effect is that it makes it harder for teams to acquire Kevin Durant, awesome. Well, good for the Timberwolves.
And I just think too, like going back to the doom or gloom thing, like, you know, if they do hit that over that we talked about at the beginning and they win 50 games, you're going to give up a really bad pick. And if the Jazz trade Donovan Mitchell in the next couple of months, you're probably not going to be swapping picks in 2026. So, like, those are two things that all of a sudden all those assets become less and less. But I also, too, like, I would love to have Windhorst report on, like, how much bitching goes on with, like, clutch running the Lakers. Or P.J. Tucker signing with the Sixers, like, 7 seconds into free agency, right? Like, one of my biggest things I enjoyed about last season was that we mentioned them, the skid mark of the NBA. They've always been a punching bag. Teams, fan bases, whatever, had no idea what to do when, like, fans, Timberwolves players punched back. Like, when the punching bag started punching back, people had no idea what to do. And this is another example of, like, the punching bag was the team that went out and got the star player. And they said, you know, F it to the picks. And then said, whatever we got to do to get this guy. And they got him. There's a lot of teams that wanted Gobert. Atlanta really wanted Gobert. And the Wolves got him. So teams don't really know what to do when the little brother starts, you know, acting up. But I love
D-Lo,
it.
D'Lo, after that Sixers game, coming out on the post-game interview and saying, one of their guys thought he could ease back in after missing a couple weeks.
Yeah, I thought it'd be pretty cute if they just like came back against us. And that was a really cool moment, too. But yeah, I don't think teams like to, they never bitch about LA. They never bitch about Brooklyn. They never bitch about the Knicks, but they bitch about the small market teams, and good for them. Right. I would actually be happy if this was the Pacers and they had done this, but good. Small market teams are taking a gamble, taking a chance. And they don't really care what other people think. So,
yeah. Yeah, it's just how do you become the cool place to be when you've become this cast off over 30 years, right? How do you? It's almost like a John Taffer bar rescue episode here. You know, you've had this dingy bar for 30 years, then there's never a line outside. You know, and Mark Laurie and Alex Rodriguez were the John Taffer that came in here and said, "We're going to create a line out the door. We're going to put a better storefront outside and just make this a more appealing place to be." And you don't get to do that by spending 50 cents on the dollar. So, and it's everything. It's overspending for Gobert. It's overspending for Tim Connelly. And it might even be overspending for Gus Johnson to come back or something. It's how do you make this a cool, appealing place to be?
And like you said, that's how you have to do it, right? But it's like, this isn't baseball. I have a friend who's an Orioles fan, like, and they just had a high pick and they had another high pick. Like, you don't just get to accumulate all these. You don't have a farm system. Because any summer now, one player just randomly gets pissed off and demands a trade. So, like, you going back to what we said at the beginning of the windows, you can't just expect Ant to get better and stay happy every year until he's 27. You have to blow out a side of your house, carve out a window, and try to contend. You might give up an eighth overall pick in 2025, but if that's the price, like you said, to have 3 or 4 50-win seasons, then you don't care what, you know, the Milwaukee Bucks GM is texting Windhorst. You just don't.
Yeah, a lot of people, some Wolves fans, but also a lot of people just outside of Wolvesville who have rightfully so ragged on the Wolves for how many first round draft picks they've whiffed on over the past 25 years are now all of a sudden devastated by how many first round chances they have forfeited over the next 7 years or so.
Like, and I think the point that you made, well, we can maybe just talk about this for a whole episode later this summer, but I've just been waiting for Mark Laurie and Alex Rodriguez to mess up. Or to like show some level of cheapness. Now, are they the ones cashing all the, or, you know, writing all the checks still? Maybe not. Maybe it is Glenn. It is going to be their asset at some point.
They got Glenn. Right? They got Glenn's routing and account number, and they're just going to town for the next year and a half.
Yeah, so they're just doing Uncle Bernie, just having them sign stuff. But like, I do really think that they kind of, you know, put up or shut up. They keep putting money where their mouth is. You made a great point. Like, they paid for Tim. They paid for this. They paid for this. Like, they did it with the Gobert thing. They said, if you need to burn through all these assets to get your guy, Tim, go get him. And that's cool because you do look around the league and not everyone has that, and it's early, but not everyone has that symbolic, you know, cohesion with their ownership and their front office. So, yes, when you take, again, not to go, I'm not a baseball aficionado, but when you take a bunch of swings, you're going to miss. But you really can't hit, you know, doubles and triples and home runs unless you take swings, and this front office and this ownership group wants to take swings. So, yeah. Sorry to everyone else that's pissed off.
they've done, Lori and A-Rod have done a really good job too, just sort of massaging and managing the Glenn Taylor relationship from getting a slice of the team first, right? That's the first impression they had to make going down to Mankato, or I think it was Naples was sort of the first two meetings back a year plus ago. But they've basically said, yeah, let's sit down. We'll have some of Becky's potato salad and lasagna, and we'll have Glenn let us run the team. Basically, you know, they've done a great job of coming in and, you know, putting their arm around Glenn and, you know, hey, Glenn, you know, thank you so much. All of this is Glenn's. You know, it was Glenn's idea to go get Tim Connelly. It's like, it really wasn't. But they've done a great job managing the relationship, at least.
Isn't it kind of weird, though? Because, like, you can tell that, like, Alex and Mark are, like, definitely overemphasizing how much Glenn does. Like, anything. There's, like, you're Alex Rodriguez. Like, you hit all these home runs. Like, you've won a World Series. Like, you are one of the faces of modern-day baseball with what he does as an analyst. And it's like, they could say anything to A-Rod, and he'd be like, yeah, but I got to give some credit to Glenn here. Like, A-Rod, yeah. I love your suit. He's like, yeah, but, you know, Glenn's wife picked this one out. And it's like, what are you talking about? Like, so, yeah.
It's definitely phony. It's phony. But it's also sort of like what, in a roundabout way, it's sort of what great leaders do, which is you deflect praise and you shoulder blame. Yeah. We'll see what happens when there's real blame, because these guys have not hit a stretch where, like, Glenn has hit 50 stretches in 25 years where, you know, the franchise is in the toilet and he's getting hammered. So we'll see what happens when they hit a rough spot and these two guys are the faces of the franchise. But right now it's all about deflecting the credit, you know?
And like you said, at some point they're going to sign off on a move that they're the owners. So like you said, if it goes wrong, you can be like, yeah, you know, well, Glenn wanted Tim to come in, or Glenn signed off on
that. That guy's crazy.
Deal.
I don't know.
But I do honestly think, and they, again, it was so weird when it came out, but the whole internship program that Mark and Alex are doing, essentially learning how to be owners under Glenn. You'll hear Mark talk, like, you know, on Dane's Pod or just in general. It sounds like they actually really enjoy that. Like, they can kind of get their feet wet as being NBA owners, which is a whole new world to essentially anyone that buys into a team. But they, you know, they have their hands held a little bit. So the inverse would be if they're just not doing anything, right? Like raising ticket prices after a playoff run, but like cutting costs or like trading away guys to save money. So the telling point will be, though, I think maybe next year or the year after, when this roster just gets more and more expensive, will they pay the tax? I know Chris Hine interviewed Alex Rodriguez in Vegas. Dane had Mark. They're both smart dudes that just perfectly salsa danced around the answer, but will you actually pay the luxury tax when you have to, if your team's competitive? And that remains to be seen.
I think the Warriors paid $350 million for their roster last year. I'm trying to pull this up here just for fun.
Well, as you know, the luxury tax too, it's not just paying a penalty. It's that repeater tax that really gets you, but it's also not getting the money that these other teams are paying into the luxury tax. So yeah, if you're a tax team, you don't get that $250 million tax penalty that the Warriors paid last year. Was it 350?
Yeah. Maybe I was over exaggerating, but they had, is this accurate? They had $175 million in taxable salaries last year. So they were $40 million over the luxury tax, but then, and like you said, there's a repeater tax.
Repeater tax. Yep. Where basically every dollar is like $3 or $4, and that's how you get to that $160, $175. And again, that gets split up among the other teams that aren't paying the tax. So like, instead of gaining money, you're like essentially exerting money. So that still remains to be seen, because you added Gobert, who's on a massive, massive deal, and Ant's going to get paid soon, and Jaden, and who knows what happens with Russell. So are you going to be willing to pay the tax like you paid the tax to get Gobert, like you paid the ownership equity tax to get Tim Connelly? That'll be telling.
Okay, I think I found this is what I was looking for. It's worth it because the Warriors are the second most valuable franchise, somehow inexplicably behind the Knicks still. I get that it's New York and whatnot, but they're a $6 billion franchise in terms of valuation. And I think this is right, that they were a $1.9 billion franchise in 2010. So in the Steph Curry era, in the Warriors dynasty era, their franchise has gone from a $2 billion franchise to a $6 billion franchise. And they're like, well, maybe we'll spend an extra $100 million in luxury tax. Who cares? It doesn't matter.
And that's going to happen with all teams, but that's why Mark and Alex, I think, were just so smart, because they got an NBA team, there's only 30 of them, on a discount. because by 2030, the Timberwolves will probably be worth, as in just like, I don't know, $3-4 billion
or five. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, so they're going to just make a ton of money. So, you know, NBA ownership is the easiest thing to make money on. So will you use that money to put it back into the team? And as of, you know, July 20th, we're a year into this, they are doing it. So kudos to them. But it'll be that, that'll be the question that kind of sticks with them moving forward.
Just to tie this episode full circle here before we say goodbye. So you said the Wolves in 34 years have four 50-win seasons, right?
33 seasons so far, four 50-win seasons.
Okay. Some of these franchises have been around a little bit longer, but the San Antonio Spurs have 29 50-win seasons. The Phoenix Suns have 21 50-win
really?
Seasons. They had a nice little run in the 70s. They were pretty relevant in the 90s, right? And then the early 2000s with those fun ball Mike D'Antoni teams. And then the Utah Jazz, 17 50-win seasons and a lot more, like 45, 46, 49-win seasons too.
So. Well, and the Wolves thing, four 50-win seasons in 33 years, but they also came in a 4-in-5-year span.
Yeah. You
know, it's not even like it was sprinkled like every decade you and I got to celebrate one. It's just like it was a little hot patch and then it was just ice cold for as long as I've been able to drink alcohol. So, yeah, that's why you make the move. That's why you, like you said, you throw yourself into the ring and see if you can sink or swim. And if you can't swim, there are probably outlets for you to kind of retool or kind of find new ways to survive because you have the players and players are still what win, not picks.
Yep. So, all right, that's a wrap on this episode of Flagrant Howls here with Phil and Kyle. And, yeah, if you guys have suggestions on just big picture or historical topics you want us to cover, just hit us up. We're both on Twitter. You can see Kyle's on the YouTube channel here. You can see Kyle's Twitter handle right there. Last name is spelled T-H-E-I-G-E. I'm at Phil Mackey on Twitter. And you can always hit us up via email through the Score North app. There's a feedback tab at the bottom, and you can just send us emails and questions that we can flesh out on the show here. So, all right, dude. Enjoy your home bedroom there and the Ricky Rubio bobbleheads.
Appreciate you. I was gonna say next week maybe I can. I think I've seen the City Edition jerseys, the new ones, and I'm just gonna. I got to do some. Again, I have some friends at Nike. I don't think they're great. So let me do some work on that and I'll report back. But for all the years that the Timberwolves have hit those pretty well, I don't know if they're gonna hit them well this year. So more to come.
Oh, wow. What a tease for next week here. Flagrant Howls. We'll see you guys.
Did you know that 61% of pet owners feel more prepared to be a good pet parent after testing with Embark? Embark your dog with Embark's dog DNA test to get hundreds of actionable health insights. You can be proactive with their health and work with your vet on a personalized care plan. Go to EmbarkVet.com and use promo code DNA, that's DNA, to get $60 off an Embark Breed and Health Kit or Purebred Kit with free shipping. That's promo code DNA to save today.